to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich, and I would like to welcome you back to Season 3, Episode 22. Well, my friends, I've got a lot of really exciting things to talk to you about in today's episode. But the first thing I want to discuss with you today is about learning Italian. I've been talking to you a lot over the last year and a half about my journey to learning Italian. And as of today, I am officially on my 500th day studying Italian using the Duolingo language app. And after 500 days, I have some very, very strong opinions about the app in general. I have used both the free version in the beginning just to try it out, and then I used the paid version, Duolingo Plus. I think they're maybe calling it Duolingo Super now. Anyway, after 500 days of using Duolingo, I have some thoughts I'd like to share with you about Duolingo and why I'm no longer using Duolingo, why I won't be using it anymore going forward, what I'm doing instead, and also just kind of my language journey as Italian language school has finished. My language journey is taking a different direction now. So I'm doing different things than I've done. I used the combination of Duolingo and Italian language school to learn Italian. And my results have been, in my personal opinion, kind of mediocre. Now, again, I said to you 1,000 times that part of the reason for that is because we went through the pandemic and we just didn't live normal life here for about, you know, more than the last year and a half. So I've recently shared with you a lot about my new Italian coaching programs that I'm doing with Kike Language, Vera and Irene. You've both met them. You've heard me share our interactions and the language assessment that I did with them. And so now I am doing weekly one-on-one language coaching with them. We just finished on Saturday the 3-week fabulous language courses that Kike Language very generously offered to 12 of our listeners. So that was really, really fun to be able to have that opportunity to study Italian with you. Many of you who are listeners were able to join me. We had a lot of fun. We laughed a lot. There was an advanced group. There was a beginner group. And it was just a really good experience. So I'm really, really loving that laser-focused one-on-one approach to learning language. That's been really great. I'm going to be doing that for the foreseeable future. And I'm really enjoying that. But in between my language coaching days, I like to expose myself to studying Italian, of course, practicing with people that I encounter, going to social events as much as possible. Now that you can do social things again here, I just recently joined the choir here. I finally decided, okay, I'm spending enough time here. We have a place here now of our own. We're going to be here at least part of the year. They've been continuing to ask me if I would join the choir. It's a big group of Italians. Most of them don't speak English. Some of them do. But it's a really great opportunity for me to get together and spend some social time with Italians. I get to sing, which is something I really love to do. Something I'm not great at, but it's something I really love to do. And I am just good enough to be able to join them. So that's a wonderful thing. And we get to sing in some beautiful churches. There's a wonderful concert at the end of this month that's being held at a beautiful villa that's not too far from here with beautiful gardens. And so I'll be sharing that with you. But so anyway, that's another thing that I'm doing to expose myself to groups of Italian that get to know me. I get to develop friendships and relationships, something I've really been needing and missing and wanting here. And so that's, of course, something that I'm doing and I'm really, really happy about because it's forcing me to get even more serious about learning my Italian. Because every single time I have an encounter with someone and I'm not able to speak properly or I'm not able to communicate with them the way I want to, instead of discouraging me, it just encourages me to continue to learn. So after 500 days, almost a year and a half of studying language with Duolingo, now before I get into all of this, I want to just tell you, how did I choose Duolingo in the first place? I didn't really do a deep dive into language learning apps. I just knew I needed one. I needed some way to start learning Italian and start getting exposed to the language in a more serious way. My sister, who's actually a teacher, said, you know, they're using Duolingo in classrooms now because it's kind of really great for teenagers because they kind of make it feel like a game and they have points and they have all these different things. And you know, they really kind of encourage you or younger people to study language because it's kind of almost set up like a video game. And it's, you know, most kids now in school have grown up with smartphones. And so that's what they know. And it's kind of made for that. So I thought, okay, well, that's great. Started using it. And it definitely helped me with my vocabulary, helped me with my reading and comprehension. But it didn't help me with my conversational and spoken Italian very much. But I just kept doing it because I'd started it. And once I start something, I'm the kind of person that I don't like to just stop halfway through. So anyway, continued using Duolingo until recently. And recently I started saying, okay, it seems to me like there are some problems with Duolingo. One of the reasons I noticed that there are some problems with Duolingo is when Alessandro sometimes would sit down and help me with a Duolingo lesson just to kind of, you know, make sure that my pronunciation was right or help me with a couple of words if it was a particularly difficult lesson that with some things I didn't understand, he would help me with it sometimes. And what I noticed is very often, at least several times during a lesson can maybe have 20 questions, maybe several times during each lesson, he would say, that's not correct Italian. That answer that they're forcing you to give them is not even a correct answer. And that happened a number of times. And then Vera and Irene have also told me that they're not really big fans of Duolingo. And I just started doing a little bit more research of my own and found that a lot of people feel the same way. Apparently, there are a lot of people that are volunteers that basically kind of help create the words, the phrases, the language, and the practices and all the stuff that goes into Duolingo. There's a whole bunch of kind of support staff that are volunteers. So it's not even a paid staff. A lot of them, some of them are, of course, but a lot of them are just volunteers that are kind of just giving their personal feedback on the language and so on and so forth. So anyway, when I dug into finding which language app really is rated the highest and is the very, very best according to a lot of different people, what I kept coming back to, the highest rated one I kept coming back to over and over again was Babbel. Now, I've had over the course of this podcast, I've had a number of you reach out to me and say, which language app should I use? And all I was really able to tell you was, listen, I use Duolingo, but that's the only one I've ever tried. So I don't really know, you know, what to tell you as far as that's what I'm using. It seems like it's okay, but it's just, I don't have exposure to any other. So after the past week of trying out Babbel, what I can tell you is I love Babbel. And it is far superior. It doesn't feel like a game. You don't have all these stressful little bells and whistles. You pay for it. And they have a lifetime subscription. They have a monthly subscription. They have a yearly subscription. They have a six-month subscription as well, I believe. I think they offer lifetime, a year, 6 months, and then like a three-month maybe. So as I'm using Babbel every day now, I'm like comparing it. I was still using Duolingo as well, and I was comparing, and the experiences are just, it's like one of them is a game for teenagers, and the other one is like for serious language learners. And I was just like, man, I wish I'd been doing Babbel the whole time now, because I'm not trying to say I didn't learn anything from Duolingo. Those of you who are using Duolingo and love it, great. That's wonderful if it works good for you. But if I had had the choice of which language app to use in the beginning and I had done a better job of researching them, I can guarantee you I would have never chosen Duolingo. And I am loving, loving, loving using Babbel. So now, even though you guys are probably like, okay, Nathan, you know, you're going to be lucky if you can ever learn to speak Italian, just focus on Italian. Well, someday I want to learn French. And then if I can master French, which I think is going to be a little easier now that I've learned Italian, there's a lot of, you know, similarities between French and Italian and English and French. And so those three languages, there's a lot of people that say, you know, those, once you have the two of those languages, the third one is, it's a lot easier to get. And I've also learned how to learn a language for the first time in my life, truly. I'm still learning how to learn, but I'm understanding, I think, to learn how to learn something is a really important skill. So one of the great things about Babbel that I've recently discovered is that Babbel allows me to get a lifetime subscription. It's really a 100-year subscription, but they call it their lifetime subscription. So whatever day you purchase it on, it's good for the next 100 years, which I don't plan to be around, you know, for that much longer. But at least what it kind of gives me this peace of mind of knowing, like, okay, let's say I'm on a trip someday somewhere, or I've got a little break in my life, and I get to a certain point with Italian that I'm really comfortable, and then I want to start challenging myself again with a new language. I think it's really good to always learn something and sort of stretch your brain, and it's really good. It's been proven to help people avoid getting Alzheimer's and dementia. So I want to keep my brain healthy. I want to just keep learning languages. So I would love someday to also try to learn Chinese, Mandarin. I've actually studied it in the past briefly, but I would love to learn that someday in the future because it's just so completely different from any other language, and it doesn't use, you know, our alphabet. It uses a whole different alphabet, different characters. I just think it'd be really interesting to be able to speak a language that so many hundreds of millions, over a billion people speak Chinese. And I encountered a lot of Chinese people growing up in California. There was a lot of them in New York, and there are surprisingly a lot of them here in Italy. And so anyway, I'd love to learn to speak Chinese. So what I'm trying to say, I don't want to spend too much time on this topic, but I just want you to understand that I have come to a new understanding about language learning apps, and I'm super, super excited about Babbel. So I've got the lifetime subscription to Babbel, which is really great. I can learn whatever languages I want in the future, and I continue to learn Italian for forever. I think it cost me, it was originally $500 for the lifetime subscription. Then they are offering a special deal for $199 for a lifetime subscription to Babbel, which I signed up for. I was really excited about that. So as I started looking into, like, wow, this is a really great thing. I wish I could, you know, have my listeners have the same deal. I reached out to the team at Babbel and I said, listen, I'm loving your program. I just started using it. It's so much better than what I've been using with Duolingo. I have a podcast. Would you be willing to let me offer some great pricing and some of this on to my listeners? And they reached out after a few days and said, yes, we'd love to have you become a partner and we'd love to sponsor you. So I'm also excited to say that now I have my second real sponsor for this show. So Babbel is now officially a sponsor of I'm Moving to Italy and All Roads Lead to Italy. And so you can get the lifetime subscription, you can get the 12-month, you can get the 6-month. So what they are offering to our listeners of this podcast is 60% off of the lifetime membership, which is for all languages. That's the cool thing about the lifetime. It's the only one of their packages that allows you to have access to any of their plethora of languages. They've got, I think, hundreds of languages available on their platform. So you get a lifetime subscription and you get access to all their languages for the rest of your life. That's, I think, a great deal. For me, it was a no-brainer, $199. And so that's the same deal that they are allowing me to offer to all of you listeners. So it's normally $500. It's right now, it's $199. Then they've got a 12-month program. It's like $625 a month. And so for $75, which is 55% off of their regular price, then you can have a 12-month subscription to Babbel. They've got a 6-month subscription that's 45% off to the listeners. That's $45, comes out to about $7 a month. And then there's the 3-month program, comes out like $27. That's 35% off. So anyway, a lot of options there. I put the links on imovingtoitaly.com, just on the homepage. I've got, right, you just scroll down just a tiny bit and you'll see right there on the homepage the links to Babbel And I'm curious if you try Babbel, I'm going to be interested to hear from you. And especially if you've been using Duolingo and you're ready for to switch things up and take things a little more seriously, get away from this kind of gamey, point-based system and really just focus on learning your language like a regular human being, not like a robot. Thank you to Babbel for sponsoring us. I'm so grateful to you. I'm so glad that you created this amazing program for those of us who are interested in learning Italian and really any language. I'm really excited that I'm able to offer Babbel to you for such great prices now that we have them sponsoring us. How exciting is that? So anyway, check out Babbel, and I'm just over the moon that not only have I found a great new language app, I'm also able to share it with you, and you guys get to have the same savings that I was able to have. So it's just a win-win. I'm just excited about it. I've told you guys before, I'm not interested in just selling stuff. I'm only interested in promoting any products that are actually helpful, that I use personally, that I find value in. Same thing with the VPN service that I share with you that are also our sponsor, ExpressVPN. Same thing with them. I use them every single day. I couldn't do Italy without having ExpressVPN. So that's another, those are the two sponsors. I may never have any other sponsors than these two. Who knows? We'll see. But if I do have a sponsor, you'd be guaranteed that it's something, it's a product that I use, it's a service that I use, and it is something that I have, you know, been able to find real, real value using here in Italy. It's made my life in Italy so much better. So anyway, check out Babbel. Let me know what you guys think. I think you're going to love it. All right, well, that brings us to one of our main topics for today's episode, and that is that I had my very first experience this past week with the Italian medical system. In a previous episode, I shared with you that I got my residency, I got my medical ID card, and we went and selected our primary doctor. His name is Dr. Fava. He just lives in a little village not too far from here, about 10 minutes away. So when we went and met with our doctor, he gave us these orders for blood work panels, or basically kind of to have our blood work checked. I think it's just a good thing to do. So we had these two orders to have blood work done. They were valid for the next 6 months, and we didn't use them. It's been, I think, about 5 months, and Alessandro's like, we better use these before we have to go get new ones made before they expire. So he set up appointments for both of us here at the local hospital in Conegliano. And so we went and had our blood work done, our blood taken this past week. And of course, I documented the whole thing, you know, covertly, was carrying my phone with me and filming the whole thing as I walked into the hospital and through the hospital. And even while I even put my phone in my pocket so I could take a video of the woman while she was taking my blood. And it was a really interesting experience. So I want to tell you what my first experience was like. So first thing is we arrived and I had my appointment at 8:30 in the morning, 8:36, which I thought was kind of interesting that they had such a specific time for the appointment. And I figured that's probably, it was just generated by, you know, like a scheduling software or something that they have at the hospital. So I didn't really think anything of it. We arrived a little bit early and we walked in. I think we had to go to the second floor of the hospital. First thing I noticed, we walk into the hospital. You still have to wear masks in hospitals, which I think out of all the places that you should wear masks, I think that a hospital is probably one of the best places in the world to wear a mask. I mean, you see doctors and nurses wearing them in hospitals. I just think it's a really healthy place. That's usually where people go when they're not well. And so wearing masks, I think, is just great for the people that are in the hospitals, that you don't want to bring your germs into them, but also, you know, you don't want to catch anything while you're there as well. So we went up to the second floor wearing our masks. As we're walking to the elevators, they have a little cafe right inside the hospital. And I can't tell you how good the smells coming from the Italian cafe, the little bar where they have sandwiches and brioche and cornetti and, of course, espresso. And it just smelled so good. Alessandro has told me before that Italians actually like to go to hospitals sometimes because the food in hospitals in Italy is so good. And I just thought that was so bizarre to hear that. We have the exact opposite feeling about food in the United States. You usually get like Jell-O and some weird rubbery cold food in the hospitals in the United States. But in Italy, the food, just walking past their cafe, it smelled amazing. And I thought, wow, okay, that explains it. You know, that's, Alessandro was right. This really is amazing. So the hospital was absolutely spotless. I grew up hearing how bad it was in Europe, their socialized medicine. And I'm not a socialist. I'm just not a socialist. I don't believe in socialism. That's just not my personal affiliation. I just grew up hearing such negative things about European medicine. And so I was really curious. I went in with a very open mind. I was very curious. I've been curious ever since I moved here, even before I moved here. Like, what is it? What is healthcare really like here? I've heard that there are some long waiting periods for certain things. And, you know, with COVID, people that wanted to have cancer screenings and all that, a lot of diagnoses have kind of fallen between the cracks because the focus really has been on COVID only for the last 2 years. And so a lot of people that needed to have their, you know, other conditions treated, they weren't able to. So I've been reading different things. But I was like, okay, it would be interesting to see, as a healthy person going in just for something very routine like blood work, what is the experience going to be like? So we hop into the elevator, we go up to the second floor, and we go to down this long hallway, and we turn, we go down another long hallway, and we get to this spot where this room is kind of filled with a whole bunch of people, and there are these four windows. And behind the glass of these windows, where you can speak through a microphone to the women behind, you're basically just kind of waiting in line for them to call your number. And when I say call your number, it's not the people don't call your number. There's a big screen, a TV screen, several of them around the room. So my appointment number was also the number that was like associated with my appointment, if that makes sense. So all these numbers were popping up, and it was kind of a combination of letters and numbers, but at the last two numbers of mine was 36, and I was supposed to be there at 8:36. So it's interesting. The time they give you also is the number that you are waiting for to pop up on the screen, so then you know that it's your turn to go up to the counter. So we stood there, and looked like it was going to be a little bit of a longer wait, so we sat down. And as soon as we sat down, our number popped up. And so we went up to the counter. I think we maybe waited a total of 10 minutes. We walked up to the counter and I gave them my medical card. And they said, okay. So they like kind of processed me in the computer, you know, put all my information in. And then they gave me this receipt, that kind of big paper that they printed out, two papers. One was for the lab, and the other was this kind of interesting looking, really large, wide receipt thing. And so Alessandro says, okay, we need to take this receipt. We need to go over to these machines right here, these payment machines, and we need to pay for this service. So we walked over, and it was 24 euros to have a full panel of blood work and urine work that they wanted us to do. So it was 24 euros each to do that, which was, I think, incredibly reasonable. And so we paid, you can pay with cash or with a card. So we just paid with cash. And then once we get that gives us another receipt verifying that we've paid. So then we went and waited again for this long row of doors that people were just going in and out of very quickly. So people were moving. It wasn't like people were all just standing around waiting. It was like people were going in to get their blood taken. They were literally walking out like 2 minutes later. And it was just kind of this revolving door. Well, I should say revolving doors, because there was about five or six different little kind of small, tiny rooms. So there was a phlebotomist in there, the person that takes the blood, that's what they're called. And then a lab tech that kind of sorts all the paperwork, makes sure the blood work is, and the urine work, the urine samples are placed with, you know, where they're supposed to be, and make sure they have all the right paperwork going with them. And so anyway, I was just like kind of amazed at how fast people were going in and out of those, of the blood places. You know, they'd come out with, you know, that little bandage on their elbow, the inside of their elbow where they'd had their blood taken. There were a lot of old people, younger people. It was just kind of a really interesting mix of people. So anyway, when my name got called, I walked over and walked in, and they were, you know, trying to pronounce my name, which is always interesting. Nathan Paul. No, they get a lot of interesting names, because there were people there from all over the world. You know, people that live in Italy, there's a very There's a very wide range. There's people from India, Bangladesh, people from different places in Africa, and people from Asia. So there's just, you know, people from different parts of Europe. So they're used to unusual names, but it was just interesting to hear them try to pronounce my name. It's always interesting for Italians to pronounce my name. So I sat down, rolled up my sleeve, and I didn't even feel the needle. It was probably the easiest blood taking experience. And I used to give blood a lot when I was younger. One of the things I would do, like every month, I would go to the blood bank and give blood. And I've never had anybody stick a needle into my vein and have it be such a painless experience. But I mean, these Italian people taking blood, I mean, they are experts. They do, I think, probably like, I would say like a good 25 to 35 of these an hour, if not even more. It's just amazing how fast that the turnaround is. So I was in and out of there with the two vials of blood that they took in just a matter of minutes. And then off we went back down through the elevator at the hospital. We got to our car and Alessandro was like, "Where are the keys?" And I was like, "Oh, I didn't drive here. You drove here. Normally I drive, but this day he drove." And so he's like, "Oh my gosh, I lost my keys." And he's like, "I've been so scattered lately. I don't know. He never loses anything." So he was all stressed out. And so we ended up having to walk all the way back into the hospital, all the way back up to the second floor, all the way back into that room where we had been waiting. And right there, sure enough, right there on the ledge behind the little bench that we were sitting on was not only our keys, but also my medical card. And when we walked in, one of the people sitting there waiting was like, "Chiavi e tessera?" I was like, "Oh, yes." I was like, "Yes, yes." And I was like, "Si, si, si." And they're like, "Qui, qui." And I was like, "Oh, grazie mille, grazie mille." So anyway, we got my medical card. Thank God we didn't lose that. And the keys to the car. And then off we went back home. And we got home. Alessandro had accidentally left the keys of our house, locked them into the house. Poor Alessandro, he was having a real not good day when it came to keys. Normally it's me that loses everything, but Alessandro is so precise by nature and so methodical. He never loses anything. And so he's like, this is what's going on. He's like, "I've been so stressed lately and this is so unlike me, but here I am. I'm losing things. I never lose things." It's true. He never does. And so he's just like, "I need to get out of Italy for a little while. And I need a little break." Alessandro has been dealing with three different family members and kind of being the caretaker for them for the past year and a half. The whole time we've been here in Italy, he's been helping an aunt that has breast cancer, his grandmother who has dementia, his mother who's been dealing with MS, which is another issue, which is thankfully getting better. But he's just been daily. He's at the hospital every single day, and it's just not allowing him a lot of free time. Sometimes he'll take two or three people to the doctor in the same day, and it's just he's constantly either going back and forth to the pharmacy or a hospital or a specialist, and or someone just had surgery. It's just been constant. And so anyway, he's ready to take a little break and get back to the United States for a little while, and where he's just not on call 24/7. And I felt kind of bad for him, and I really, really understand that he really needs a break. I've been so focused on my work, and he's gone so much doing that. I guess I haven't realized what a toll it was taking on him, but it really is. And so we're looking forward to taking a little break. I might even take a little break on doing the podcast while we're traveling or while we're gone for a little while. I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll see. I'm also working on some really exciting things for season four. It's going to be starting in July unless I take a break for the summer. But anyway, it's going to be starting sometime this summer. And so I'm looking forward to that. Okay, one final thing I want to talk to you about before we get to the end of the episode is that this past week, Italy celebrated their Republic Day. On June 2nd, Italy celebrated 76 years as a republic. The Italian people, after World War II, decided we don't want to be ruled by a king anymore. We want to be self-governed. We want to become a republic. And then a few years later, they voted again to become a democracy. So they were a republic democracy. And so anyway, in 1946 was the year, and the day was June 2nd, which was just this past week, was the year that Italians said, we no longer want to be ruled over by a king, by a monarchy. And so that was celebrated this past week. And one of the things that is always very iconic during that celebration in Rome is when these fighter jets called the Arrows, I don't know what the Italian word for arrow is, I should probably look that up, but the English translation is the Arrows, and they fly in formation in kind of like a V formation, and they have these wonderful clouds of colored smoke, red, white, and green, that are the colors of the Italian flag. They call it the tricolor. And so those fly over the city of Rome and do all these wonderful routines, and this colored smoke comes out. It's very, very patriotic. And so anyway, congratulations to Italy. Italy is a relatively young nation compared to a lot of other countries in the world, meaning that it's not that they don't have history that goes back thousands of years. It's just that their current government is only about 67 years old. Italy was unified about 150 years ago. The continent of Italy, including the islands, was unified. And there, instead of having multiple kingdoms, you know, the southern kingdoms and the northern kingdoms, Italy was unified to one nation about the time that the United States was going through their civil war. And so that's the unification of Italy. So that's sometimes easy to confuse the unification of Italy in the 1800s, 1861, with the establishment of the new government, the Republic, in 1946. So anyway, just wanted to clarify those things. And so I wrote an article in Real News from Italy this week. You should read that article if you're interested. Of course, you should read that article every week. If you want to get signed up, go to allroadsleadtoitaly.com, leave your email address, and I will add you to the mailing list and then mail you out the weekly newspaper, Real News from Italy, every week. A lot of people read it. A lot of people find it very interesting. I spend several days every week working on it, putting it together for you. So it's a labor of love for me. And I really appreciate those of you who have chosen to support. There's a way to now subscribe to the newspaper to support what I'm doing. I really appreciate those of you who have subscribed to Real News from Italy. That means a lot, and I really appreciate it. So make sure that you are checking that out, Real News from Italy, and that's at allroadsleadtoitaly.com. I know it can be kind of complicated because I've got all these different things. I've got the podcast, which is imovingtoitaly.com, and then the All Roads Lead to Italy, which is kind of my main site. So, by the way, those of you who are interested in buying merchandise, I'm Moving to Italy merchandise or All Roads Lead to Italy merchandise, shirts that say ciao, ciao, ciao on them or whatever, you can go to All Roads Lead to Italy. I've got my marketplace there. You can check that out as well if you'd like to buy some gifts or some Italian products. My Italian art and paintings have been selling very well on the site. So if you're looking for a gift for someone, go to allroadsleadtoitaly.com and go to the market page, and you can find some really interesting objects and items to for gifts or for yourself or your home. So anyway, check those out. So thank you to those of you who have made purchases recently. I really appreciate it, and that really helps to support what we are doing here. So thank you. Well, that brings us to our reading of The Alchemist. In last week's episode, Santiago met Fatima while he was at the well. He's helping the Englishman try to find the alchemist. Of course, the boy, Santiago, is not interested in finding the alchemist himself. He's just interested in finding his treasure in Egypt. But of course, on their way to Egypt, they had to stop at this oasis, and they ended up having to stay at this oasis for several months because there was a war going on with the tribes in the desert, And a neutral place during the war, the desert, is at an oasis, because it's kind of the code of the desert. If you're going to have a war, you go and have it out in the desert, but you never have a war inside the oasis, because that's where women and children are, and that's just kind of the code of the desert. Santiago and the Englishman meet Fatima. She kind of helps to guide them where she thinks the man who makes medicines, who they assume might be the alchemist, she kind of lets them know where that might be. So since that happened, that was last week's episode. So since then, Santiago was out in the desert alone one day, and he saw a vision. He saw a vision of some birds, some falcons, that were doing something. One of them was attacking the other one, and it was a very, very strange kind of vision that he was having. And it sort of dawned on him that what he was witnessing was actually a vision into the future of what was going to be happening, and something bad was maybe going to be happening at the oasis. And so the boy was thinking, should I go and tell the chieftains, the men that are in charge, kind of like the head honchos here at the oasis? Should I go and tell them about my vision? Are they going to laugh at me? Are they going to think I'm crazy? You know, I'm a foreigner, and are they going to even trust what I have to say? Please forgive my long backstory on that, but I wanted to make sure that you understand where we're coming from, where we're going with the story. So I'm going to be reading a section about that moment when the boy has just met the alchemist, and he doesn't even realize he's met the alchemist yet, but he has. And he asks the alchemist where he is from. And the alchemist on his horse, as he's riding away, is pointing to the south. So that's the moment that I'm going to be reading in Italian from now. So here we go. And of course, afterwards, Jeremy Irons will be picking up and telling the more full version of the story. So enjoy. Da dove vieni? Gridò il ragazzo, mentre il cavaliere si allontanava, la mano con il frustino indicò verso sud. Il ragazzo aveva incontrato l'alchemista.
God only rarely reveals the future. When he does so, it is for only one reason. It's a future that was written so as to be altered. God had shown the boy a part of the future, the camel driver thought. Why was it that he wanted the boy to serve as his instrument? Go and speak to the tribal chieftains, said the camel driver. Tell them about the armies that are approaching. They'll laugh at me. Now they are men of the desert, and the men of the desert are used to dealing with omens. Well then, they probably already know. They're not concerned with that right now. They believe that if they have to know about something Allah wants them to know, someone will tell them about it. It has happened many times before, but this time the person is you. The boy thought of Fatima, and he decided he would go to see the chiefs of the tribes. The boy approached the guard at the front of the huge white tent at the center of the oasis. I want to see the chieftains. I brought omens from the desert. Without responding, the guard entered the tent, where he remained for some time. When he emerged, it was with a young Arab dressed in white and gold. The boy told the younger man what he had seen, and the man asked him to wait there. He disappeared into the tent. Night fell, and an assortment of fighting men and merchants entered and exited the tent. One by one, the campfires were extinguished, and the oasis fell as quiet as the desert. Only the lights in the great tent remained. During all this time, the boy thought about Fatima, and he was still unable to understand his last conversation with her. Finally, after hours of waiting, the guard bade the boy enter. The boy was astonished by what he saw inside. Never could he have imagined that here, in the middle of the desert, there existed a tent like this one. The ground was covered with the most beautiful carpets he'd ever walked upon, and from the top of the structure hung lamps of hand-wrought gold, each with a lighted candle. The tribal chieftains were seated at the back of the tent in a semicircle, resting upon richly embroidered silk cushions. Servants came and went with silver trays laden with spices and tea. Other servants maintained the fires in the hookahs. The atmosphere was suffused with the sweet scent of smoke. There were 8 chieftains, but the boy could see immediately which one of them was the most important. An Arab dressed in white and gold, seated at the center of the semicircle. At his side was the young Arab the boy had spoken with earlier.
"Who is this stranger who speaks of omens?" asked one of the chieftains, eyeing the boy.
"It is I," the boy answered, and he told what he had seen.
"Why would the desert reveal such things to a stranger when it knows that we have been here for generations?" said another of the chieftains.
"Because my eyes are not yet accustomed to the desert," the boy said. "I can see things that eyes habituated to the desert might not see. And also because I know about the soul of the world," he thought to himself.
"The oasis is neutral ground. No one attacks an oasis," said the third chieftain.
"I can only tell you what I saw. If you don't want to believe me, you don't have to do anything about it." The men fell into animated discussion. They spoke in an Arab dialect the boy didn't understand, but when he made to leave, the guard told him to stay. The boy became fearful. The omens told him that something was wrong. He regretted having spoken to the camel driver about what he had seen in the desert. Suddenly, the elder at the center smiled almost imperceptibly, and the boy felt better. The man hadn't participated in the discussion, and in fact, hadn't said a word up to that point. But the boy was already used to the language of the world, and he could feel the vibrations of peace throughout the tent. Now his intuition was that he'd been right in coming. The discussion ended. The chieftains were silent for a few moments as they listened to what the old man was saying. Then he turned to the boy. This time his expression was cold and distant.
2,000 years ago, in a distant land, a man who believed in dreams was thrown into a dungeon and then sold as a slave, the old man said, now in the dialect the boy understood. Our merchants bought that man and brought him to Egypt. All of us know that whoever believes in dreams also knows how to interpret them.
The elder continued.
When the Pharaoh dreamed of cows that were thin and cows that were fat, this man I'm speaking of rescued Egypt from famine. His name was Joseph. He too was a stranger in a strange land like you, and he was probably about your age.
He paused, and his eyes were still unfriendly.
We always observe the tradition. The tradition saved Egypt from famine in those days and made the Egyptians the wealthiest of peoples. The tradition teaches men how to cross the desert and how their children should marry. The tradition says that an oasis is neutral territory because both sides have oases and so both are vulnerable.
No one said a word as the old man continued.
But the tradition also says that we should believe the messages of the desert. Everything we know was taught to us by the desert.
The old man gave a signal, and everyone stood. The meeting was over. The hookahs were extinguished, and the guards stood at attention. The boy made ready to leave, but the old man spoke again.
Tomorrow we are going to break the agreement that says no one at the oasis may carry arms. Throughout the entire day, we will be on the lookout for our enemies. When the sun sets, the men will once again surrender their arms to me. For every 10 dead men among our enemies, you will receive a piece of gold. But arms cannot be drawn unless they also go into battle. Arms are as capricious as the desert, and if they are not used, the next time they might not function. If at least one of them hasn't been used by the end of the day tomorrow, one will be used on you.
When the boy left the tent, the oasis was illuminated only by the light of the full moon. He was 20 minutes from his tent and began to make his way there. He was alarmed by what had happened. He had succeeded in reaching through to the soul of the world, and now the price for having done so might be his life. It was a frightening bet. But he had been making risky bets ever since the day he had sold his sheep to pursue his personal legend. As the camel driver had said, to die tomorrow was no worse than dying on any other day. Every day was there to be lived or to mark one's departure from this world. Everything depended on one word. Maktub. Walking along in the silence, he had no regrets. If he died tomorrow, it would be because God was not willing to change the future. He would at least have died after having crossed the strait, after having worked in a crystal shop, and after having known the silence of the desert and Fatima's eyes. He had lived every one of his days intensely since he had left home so long ago. If he died tomorrow, he would already have seen more than other shepherds, and he was proud of that. Suddenly, he heard a thundering sound, and he was thrown to the ground by a wind such as he had never known. The area was swirling in dust so intense that it hid the moon from view. Before him was an enormous white horse, rearing over him with a frightening scream. When the blinding dust had settled a bit, the boy trembled at what he saw. Astride the animal was a horseman dressed completely in black, with a falcon perched on his left shoulder. He wore a turban, and his entire face, except for his eyes, were covered with a black kerchief. "Who dares to read the meaning of the flight of the hawks?" he demanded, so loudly that his words seemed to echo through the 50,000 palm trees of Al-Fayyum. "It is I who dare to do so," said the boy. "Be careful with your prognostications," said the stranger. "When something is written, there is no way to change it." "All I saw was an army," said the boy. "I didn't see the outcome of the battle." The stranger seemed satisfied with the answer, but he kept the sword in his hand. "What is a stranger doing in a strange land?" "I'm following my personal legend. It's not something you would understand." The stranger placed his sword in its scabbard, and the boy relaxed. "I had to test your courage," the stranger said. "Courage is the quality most essential to understanding the language of the world." The boy was surprised. The stranger was speaking of things very few people knew about. "You must not let up, even after having come so far," he continued. "You must love the desert, but never trust it completely. Because the desert tests all men. It challenges every step and kills those who become distracted." What he said reminded the boy of the old king. "If the warriors come here, and your head is still on your shoulders at sunset, come and find me," said the stranger. The same hand that had brandished the sword now held a whip. The horse reared again, raising a cloud of dust. "Where do you live?" shouted the boy as the horseman rode away. The hand with the whip pointed to the south. The boy had met the alchemist. Next morning, there were 2,000 armed men scattered throughout the palm trees at Al-Fayyum. Before the sun had reached its high point, 500 tribesmen appeared on the horizon. The mounted troops entered the oasis from the north. It appeared to be a peaceful expedition, but they all carried arms hidden in their robes. When they reached the white tent at the center of Al-Fayyum, they withdrew their scimitars and rifles, and they attacked an empty tent. The men of the oasis surrounded the horsemen from the desert, and within half an hour, all but one of the intruders were dead. The children had been kept at the other side of a grove of palm trees and saw nothing of what had happened. The women had remained in their tents, praying for the safekeeping of their husbands, and saw nothing of the battle either. Were it not for the bodies there on the ground, it would have appeared to be a normal day at the oasis. The only tribesman spared was the commander of the battalion. That afternoon, he was brought before the tribal chieftains, who asked him why he had violated the tradition. The commander said that his men had been starving and thirsty, exhausted from many days of battle, and had decided to take the oasis so as to be able to return to the war. The tribal chieftain said that he felt sorry for the tribesmen, but that the tradition was sacred. He condemned the commander to death without honor. Rather than being killed by a blade or a bullet, he was hanged from a dead palm tree, where his body twisted in the desert wind.
tribal chieftain called for the boy and presented him with 50 pieces of gold. He repeated his story about Joseph of Egypt and asked the boy to become the counselor of the oasis.
Well, how's that for an interesting story? Anyway, I love that sort of twist, and I love that something really wonderful has finally happened to Santiago. He's been struggling a lot over the past several chapters of the story, and so now something great has happened, and he's a rich young man now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as the story concludes over the next few episodes. Hope you enjoyed that. Well, that brings us to our surrounding sounds for this week's episode, and I have three sounds for you today. The first sound I have is the sound of being in the hospital while we were waiting, and then went in and gave the blood for our blood samples, and then when we left. And then when I had to go back in to get my card that and keys that we had accidentally left inside the hospital. So that's the first sound I have for you. The second sound I have for you is a little clip from one of our group language classes from Kike Language. Vera and Irene have been very, very graciously for the last 3 weeks language classes. So this is a little clip from one of the beginning classes. These are some of your fellow listeners who were joining in the language learning process. So this is a little clip from that. We were having a really great time. And so you get to kind of have an idea of what the language classes are like with Kike Language, the group language conversation classes. The final sound I have for you is a little clip of me using the Babbel language app for the very first time and what that sort of sounds like. So enjoy those sounds, and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye.
Ok, Nie. Un attimo che esce la poeta. 8:23.
Maria.
Vuole fare il pagamento, non so io.
Un po'.
Un po' in ritardo. Giallo, rosso.
Bene,
grazie,
buona giornata.
Buona giornata a te.
Si sta facendo, she's making herself bella, beautiful. That's how we say, I'm making myself beautiful. Si sta facendo bella. Okay, so yeah, I was saying, 99% of the time, you can go with the last letter of the noun, spaghetti buoni, ragazze brave, and so on. But not all the time. For example, the word problema, so problem, is a problem, because it ends with an Italian a problema, but it's masculine, it's an exception. So you say un problema grosso, big, grosso, but that's just an exception. Let's say that 99% of the times you can listen to the ending of the word and just use the same.
Okay.
But what I want you to understand with this lesson is that brava is for people, buono is for food, and then we have, Carmela, would you like to read this?
Che bello!
Oh, you can hear the Sicilian accent right there, it's beautiful. Che bello, bello, okay? So the girl in the picture, she's looking at a painting. I think that's Venice, yeah. But the painting, il quadro. So it's masculine, bello. You can say bello to people. So good looking, handsome, beautiful. You can say it for a landscape, for a painting, for everything that looks good, okay? Tastes good, buono. Looks good, bello.
Can you do the same exact things with the word bello that we did with the word bravo?
Yes, I can, of course.
I mean, I don't mean,
don't
I just,
you help me?
I don't mean for you to write them. I just mean, can you change that word exactly the same way using the same rules?
Yeah, why don't you help me? Try and say, Italy is beautiful.
Italia è bellissima.
Okay. L'Italia, we use an article before that. Okay. L'Italia è bella or bellissima.
And so, so Italia, because it's a feminine word, Italy is a feminine word. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay.
You said you start with Italia.
L'Italia.
L'Italia.
L'apostrofe. L'Italia è bella. And gli Stati Uniti sono, are. Wanna try it? Someone else?
Belli.
Sono.
Yeah, there we go. Belli, because gli Stati Uniti. It's plural masculine. Gli Stati Uniti sono belli. Belli.
Belli.
Le fotomodelle, le fotomodelle, the top models. Le fotomodelle sono
bellissime.
Bellissime, belle, bellissime, top models, fotomodelle, they're all girls here, fotomodelle, belle.
Okay.
Didn't say they were boy girl models, they could be boy models too.
Yeah, but in Italian we know that if they're boy models, we say fotomodelli, fotomodelli. So we know if you're talking about girls,
or boys
walking down the catwalk, or men. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Okay.
So le fotomodelle sono belle. I fotomodelli sono belli.
That's helpful to know that bravo and bello are two words that you could treat the same way. That's helpful.
Yeah. Bravo, bello, buono, all the same way.
Got it.
Because they're all adjectives. The same thing applies to red, big, interesting, boring, all the adjectives.
Got it.
All things that describe something. But now the last word. Ellen, would you like to read this sentence again? The last one.
Yes. Parli bene italiano.
Yes. Parli bene Italiano, bravissima. Do you know what this means?
That I speak Italian?
Yeah, and you speak it bene. Bene. Well.
Well.
Well. Okay. So you see, bene only goes with verbs. Okay, like well. Okay. It's the same idea.
Probably.
Okay. I speak well. You shouldn't say I speak good, right? That's
right.
What I was taught in school. And so this one never changes because verbs are not masculine, feminine, singular, plural. Verbs are verbs, are action. Okay.
Okay.
So the word bene stays bene. It's always bene. Voi, voi, 1, 2, 3, 4, the four of you. Voi parlate bene italiano. Quasi. Quasi. You will. Okay. Bene. And it's also something we say like well in English, like a filler word. Bene. So, what were you doing? Okay. It's like, well, let's see. Something like that. Bene. Bene.
All right. I have a question about parli. Parli, is that a man talking? Because if it's parli, is that masculine or feminine as well?
No, it's not. It's just a picture because I had three women already. I wanted to be fair. And no, the verbs are always the same, okay? It's not masculine or feminine. It's only different for io, parlo, you singular, tu, one person, tu Carmela, parli, but also tu Nathan, parli. I don't care if man or woman. He speaks, lui parla, parla, even if it's a man. Lui parla, he speaks. Lei parla, she speaks. Lui and lei are the same, okay?
So it only changes depending on if it's one, two people or a group of people.
If it's I, you, one person, he or she, and it's the same, we, you plural, they, a lot right. of people. It's the whole conjugation.
Right, okay.
The problem is that you don't have that in English. You only add in the present tense the S with he, she, and it. So it's kind of sometimes confusing for you. We change for every single subject of the verb.
Yeah.
But bene never changes, okay?
Oh, thank heaven.
But can
so
you
we
say,
love bene.
So can you say benissimo?
Yes, you can say benissimo because it means very well, molto bene, benissimo, okay? But now the context is different, and I think this is something that even if you come to Italy on holiday, you need. Like you follow a guided tour, and you say to the guide, brava or bravo, okay? You eat something so good, and you say, buono. You see, I don't know, the Last Supper, Leonardo's Last Supper, and you say, bello, okay? Or you, someone asks, is it okay if I help you with your luggage or something? And then you say, bene, grazie, va bene, va bene. So with verbs, it's bene. Those are all positive things that you probably want to say a lot when you're in Italy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Buono, when, oh, this means buono in Italian. Do you know this?
Yeah,
buono, something good to eat. We go like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Or, this one is the most. Okay. So, buono, good to eat. Bello, good looking. And bene, well. Okay. But obviously, those are also used with a second or a third meaning, like in English. Okay. But it's all, it can all be translated to good in English unless you use synonyms. So, bravo is talented person, a skillful person, or so on. Or as a moral quality, una brava persona, it's a good person. It's also someone who does charity, who helps people, okay? Brava, brava, a good person. Buono, the same as food, is tasty and yummy, okay, for food, but is also loving, kind, sweet, benevolent. And this is for people, okay? So, Nathan è molto buono. È molto buono. He's a very good person. We like him. We listen to his podcast and so on. Or I can say, I read your essay. È buono. It's solid. It's...
Now, I see on Bravo and... Bueno, it's both. You could use either one for kind and beloved person.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Good. Yeah. For people and for things. And yeah, they're very similar. Buono is like, yeah, we even say buono come il pane, good like bread, to say someone is really generous and sweet, quite bravo because he does, he or she does something for other people. So there, you can also use this for people, and they're all positive. Okay, so as for bravo, you did your homework, buono, yummy, but also for people, bravo because you are very generous, buono because you are sweet and loving. And that's for people, okay? Bello, we said that it's good looking, even for a landscape, a city, a book is bello, okay? Something that is good. Or you see this one, the last one, to emphasize a concept, I can say, è bello difficile. I'll write that down for you. È bello difficile. Now the whole sentence. L'esame è bello difficile. Literally, I'm saying l'esame, the exam, è, is, bello, good looking, hard, difficile. It's really hard, okay? So you can hear this word bello even out of context just to say a lot about. You don't need to use it this way, but just know that you might hear it this way.
So it like means extremely something, like means extremely. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. That's, I've never heard like, that before.
Like it's like really difficult.
Yeah, really,
really difficult.
It's so difficult, it's almost beautiful.
it's like something like that. I don't know.
I have a question about the L in front. Okay, esame, is that esame feminine?
Like il libro, right? The book. The book.
It It's also the way, like what we were saying a minute ago about Italy, l'Italia, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Words that start with a vowel.
Yeah.
Start,
good.
Begin with L.
Wow. Look at you, exactly. Ellen.
That was beginner Duolingo, and you know that.
There's a lot of people that don't know that, even that have made it through the beginning phases. I forget sometimes, trust me.
Sorry, somebody came to the door now. It's a madhouse over here. I'm at my mother's house. There was so much emotion.
The form of the before a vowel is often gli, G-L-I.
That's the plural.
Oh, this is the plural.
Gli,
okay.
Alberi.
All right, okay. So, L apostrophe is for single,
mm-hmm.
singular, and GLI is for plural. Okay, okay.
Like, wouldn't you use, like for the United States, use gli Stati Uniti, right? Because it's multiple states.
Gli Stati Uniti.
Okay.
I'm missing all my vocabulary. Stati Uniti. Gli amici, gli alberi, gli annunci, advertisement.
Birds.
Now I can't think of anything, but gli orti, the vegetable gardens. Sorry, I'm just making up words and making
sense. Is the G silent? Are you saying gli?
No.
Gli.
Gli. Gli.
Gli. Gli. Not li. Gli. Spaghetti with garlic, extra virgin olive oil, and hot pepper. How do you call them in Italian? Spaghetti.
Aglio olio.
Aglio. There you go. You just said it. Aglio. That's that sound. Aglio.
Aglio.
Gli spaghetti, aglio, olio, e peperoncino.
Come sta?
Buonasera.
Buonasera.
Ciao Maria.
Ciao Maria.
Buonasera, signora Rossi.
Buonasera, signora Rossi.
Buonasera. Good evening.
Buonasera.
Piacere. Pleased to meet you.
Piacere.
Come sta? How are you? Formal.
Come sta?
Arrivederci. Goodbye.
Arrivederci. Buonasera. È lei la signora Marchi?
Sì, sono io.
Piacere. Come sta?
Bene, grazie. E lei?
Anch'io sto bene. Arrivederci.
Abito a Trieste. Io abito a Roma. Lui invece a Latina.
Piacere, sono la signora Ferrarini.
Piacere, sono Andrea. Lei di dov'è?
Sono di qui. E tu di dove sei?
Sono di Palermo. E voi siete di Bologna?
No, noi siamo di Venezia. Loro invece sono di Mantova.
Ma allora siamo tutti di città diverse.
I hope you enjoyed those sounds from this week's episode. And I want to thank you again so much for coming back and sharing this time with me. I really, really appreciate it. I look forward to this absolutely every week. And it is so wonderful to know that I have this time to share with you. I love getting your feedback and hearing from you, getting messages from you, and letting me know what you thought about this episode. I'm really grateful for those of you who have taken the time to write a quick review and leave your 5-star rating for the podcast. That makes such a big difference, and it's something I really, really appreciate. So thanks for taking a few seconds to just do that. That makes such a big difference for the growth of this podcast and for having other people be able to find us. Once again, thank you to Babbel for being our new sponsor. I am so excited that in the past week this development took place and we now have a second wonderful sponsor of our podcast. Thank you to them for offering this fantastic savings to all of you, all of the listeners. So make sure you go to imovingtoitaly.com, and on the homepage you can find the links to the wonderful savings that Babbel offers. Again, I got the lifetime subscription, which allows me to be able to learn any language I want on their platform for the rest of my life, unlimited. And so I'm just really excited to be able to continue learning not just Italian, but other languages. And so anyway, check them out. And once again, thank you to them for being a wonderful new sponsor of our show. Well, my friend, wherever you are listening to the sound of my voice today, I hope you are healthy and well, and I look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care, God bless, ciao, ciao, ciao.